In the previous verse, verse 5, it speaks there of Satan's darts. And we ask God to protect us from Satan's darts. And they are those sudden, sometimes vehement temptations that Satan hurls at us, hoping to trip us up all of a sudden and cause us to stumble. And sometimes, sadly, he succeeds, doesn't he? But there's something which is far more deadly than Satan's darts, and that's what's referred to in the following verse as Satan's art. Satan's art is his long-term strategy to get you to throw over the faith entirely and give yourself over to him. And it's that, Satan's art, which is to the fore in the book of Job. I'm indebted to Sinclair Ferguson for drawing this to my attention. I acknowledge that a lot of what I have to say tonight I've pinched from his book By Grace Alone, which I commend to you. You've already read one chapter if you've heard the sermon tonight. Job, as we know, was the unfortunate victim of Satan's art. And the chief weapon that Satan artfully employs in this regard is, as that verse says that we just read, to implant permanent evil thoughts in your mind. These are evil thoughts, especially about God. Is God good? If God is good, why does he let bad things happen to me? Does God even care? Even if God does care, could he do anything about it? Or is he as powerless as I am in actually being able to do anything about it? You think back to the Garden of Eden that we read from Genesis 3 this morning. Think about Satan's art. Has God really said, you shall not eat of every tree in the garden? No, God said, just one tree out of billions of trees, you're not to eat of it. But don't you know that one tree will make you like God? I mean, what sort of God is this that would keep from you such a great blessing? You see, that's Satan's art. His art is to implant deep within your mind evil thoughts about God. And this was Satan's art with Job. We know that there are other ways that Job was tempted. We know Job suffered terrible loss. He lost all his possessions. He lost 7,000 sheep and 3,000 camels and 500 yoke of oxen and 500 female donkeys. And then he lost his 7 sons and his 3 daughters. And then he lost his health. But that wasn't his severest trial. His severest trial came through the mouth of his own wife. That's where it began anyway. When his wife said to him, God doesn't care, God doesn't love you, God is not great, so curse God and die. Satan's art was not so much to beat up Job with all his losses, but Satan's art was to implant deep within Job's mind the thought that God is not who he is, God is not to be worshipped, God doesn't care. Sometimes friends don't help. And Job's friends didn't help him. They meant well. I mean, at very least they came from a long way away to be with him, and for a week they sat down with him and they said nothing. That was probably the biggest help they were. And then they had to open their mouths. They mean well. And they are keen to defend God's honour. But the only way they think they can do this is by at first implying and then openly saying, Job, you must have been a really, really bad boy for God to treat you like this. God doesn't punish good people. You see the way Bildad goes about it there in our reading in chapter 8 and verses 3 and 4. He says, does God subvert judgment? Or does the Almighty pervert justice? If your sons have sinned against him, he's cast them away for their transgression. That's why they got killed. Down in verse 13, so are the paths of all who forget God, and the hope of the hypocrite shall perish. That's you, Job. You're a hypocrite. Sometimes those who seek to defend God's honour play straight into the devil's hand. And down through the years, some of the worst damage done to God's honour has been done by those who think they're defending it. They haven't entirely missed the point. Job's three friends have missed the point. The whole point of Job's trials was this. It was to prove that there are men and women who do honour God, and not just for what they can get out of it themselves. And Satan can't stand that. As a being who has been created by God, who rebelled against God, who was cast out of heaven, he cannot stand it that there are creatures, other creatures created by God, who love God and who honour God just for who he is. Satan is insanely jealous of creatures like that. But it's true. And God is proving to Satan, and he's proving to the whole universe, that it is true. And that's what the book of Job is all about. And that's what Job's three friends never seem to be able to understand. And they can't understand that that's what it's all about, because it was outside the scope of their very limited theology about God. All they can understand is that Job is in pain, and therefore he must have sinned. And all Job can understand is that he is suffering, but he doesn't know why. He knows he hasn't sinned. Well, he hasn't sinned in the particular ways that his three friends are accusing him of, but he doesn't know why he's suffering. Let's take a quick look at what Job says to Bildad in response to his speech. In chapter 9, Job is really frustrated. And he thinks, what's the point? If God is God, what's the point of even arguing with him? What's the point of trying to argue with God? So in verse 3, he says, if one wished to contend with him, he could not answer him one time out of a thousand. And then he says, even if I were right and put my case to God, how could I ever answer him? So he says in verse 14, how then can I answer him and choose my words to reason with him? For though I were righteous, I could not answer him. He says, look, it's useless to argue with God. Having said in chapter 9 it's useless to argue with God, he then gives it a go in chapter 10. And he comes out with all these arguments, some seemingly rational, some not so. So in chapter 10, verse 3, he says, and here he's addressing God, he's arguing with God. He says, does it seem good to you that you should oppress, that you should despise the work of your hands and smile on the counsel of the wicked? Down in verse 5 he says, are your days like the days of a mortal man and your years like the days of a mighty man? So he's saying to God, God, do you only have a limited time to live? Is that it? And you want to find out all my sin and more before you yourself die? Is that what it's all about? In verse 6 he says that you should seek my iniquity and search out my sin, although you know I'm not wicked and there is no one who can deliver from your hand. And he said, oh, well, maybe this was your purpose all along, your hidden purpose. Perhaps your hidden purpose all along was to destroy me. Down in verse 13 he says, all these things you have hidden in your heart, I know that this was with you. And then down in verse 16 he says, if my head is exalted, you hunt me like a fierce lion, and again you show yourself awesome against me. And he wraps it all up by saying, why was I ever born? I wish I was dead. Verse 18, why then have you brought me out of the womb? Oh, that I had perished, and no eye had seen me. I wish I was dead. That's where Job is at. That's where he's got to in his understanding of what life's all about. But he is wrong.
okay, he's in a lot of pain. When we're in a lot of pain, we get all things out of whack. And we start to blame God for all sorts of horrible things that go wrong in our lives. And Job has got a skewed vision of who God is here. He's blaming the wrong person for the things that have gone wrong in his life. In chapter 9, verse 22, he says, "It is all one thing, therefore I say, he, God, destroys the blameless and the wicked." In verse 24, "The earth is given into the hand of the wicked. He covers the faces of the judges. If it is not he, who else could it be? If it's not God who's doing all this, who is doing it?" Now, yes, we recognise the sovereignty of God. God is in control of all events in our life, the bad as well as the good. But he is not to blame for the bad as well as the good. And that's what we find it hard to get our minds around. The Bible says, "Let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone." This was not God who had brought this evil on Job. It was Satan. It was the devil. And as hard as that might be to understand, just because we know Satan can only do what God will permit him to do, it is still not God who is to blame for the evil that befell him. It is not God who is to blame for the evil that befalls you, even though everything is under the control of God. And sometimes, in our desire to honour God as the God who is sovereign, we forget that. And we end up blaming God for a lot of things that go wrong in our lives when we should be blaming Satan or maybe some of our fellow creatures or sometimes just ourselves, though that wasn't the case here with Job. And yet even in his darkness, and this is mighty thick darkness, isn't it? Some of us have to go through some very dark times in our lives, a darkness that seems so oppressive and so all-embracing that it threatens to suffocate us. That is darkness. And yet I dare say that none of us has ever been through darkness quite as deep and quite as dark as Job's. And yet even in his darkness, we can see Job here grappling with this whole situation and seeking to come to terms with his suffering. You can see him every now and again grasping for some light in this situation. This is even before God reveals himself to Job at the end. And so, you know, what is he grasping for? Suppose you were one of Job's friends, and not one of these friends, one of his real friends. You were a friend who had a bit more understanding. How would you help Job? Or if this were you, if you were Job, what would help you? I want to suggest two questions. The first question is, yes, these are from Sinclair Ferguson. The first question is, what is God really like? What is God really like? That's a really important question to think through when you're going through a dark time. What is God really like? Job begins to answer that question in chapter 9. If you look at verse 4, let's pick it up there. God is wise in heart and mighty in strength. Who has hardened himself against him and prospered? He removes the mountains and they do not know when he overturns them in his anger. He shakes the earth out of its place and its pillars tremble. He commands the sun and it does not rise. He seals off the stars. He alone spreads out the heavens and treads on the waves of the sea. He made the Bear, Orion and Pleiades and the chambers of the south. He does great things, past finding out. Yes, wonders without number. So Job starts pretty well there. He starts by as we saw before, he starts by focusing on the sovereignty of God. But somewhere along the line, he misses the boat. You go down to verse 16, having gone through all that he knows about God, he says in verse 16, if I called and he answered me, I would not believe that he was listening to my voice. Now, listen, this is important. This is Satan's art. He gets you to believe some true things about God, but gets you to ignore a lot of other true things about God. He gets you to focus on just one aspect of God's character. He'll even get you to focus on what is true, but it's only so that you will ignore the bigger picture as to who God is and what he is like. And in this case, Job has a really clear view of God's sovereignty. I mean, as you go through the book of Job, it's the one thing Job gets right, and that is his picture of God's sovereignty. But he focuses so much on God's sovereignty that some of the time that is all he can see. God is sovereign. He can do whatever he likes, and that is why he is doing whatever he likes to me, and we're all just pawns in some giant cosmic game. And that is Satan's strategy. He's out to confuse you, even by getting you to focus on one narrow aspect of the truth. And by doing that, he gets you, in the words of Romans chapter 1, to exchange the truth of God for the lie. He wants you to lose sight of who God really is. As Calvin puts it, Satan's aim is to drive the saint to madness by despair. But it's not God who is attacking Job here. It is Satan. It is not God that attacks you to drive you to despair. It is Satan. And Satan is doubly victorious if instead he can convince you it is God. You feel like grabbing Job by the scruff of the neck and shaking him and shouting at him sometimes, don't you? It probably wouldn't have helped. It's probably not a good idea. But, I mean, you look at chapter 10, verse 16. He says, if my head is exalted, you hunt me like a fierce lion, and again you show yourself awesome against me. You hunt me like a fierce lion. You feel like shouting at Job, no, Job, that isn't God. It isn't God who is your adversary, who walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. That is the devil. And you say to Job, look, go to 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. Read 1 Peter 5 verse 8. And then you remember Job didn't have 1 Peter 5 verse 8. But you do. Or later on, Job complains, if you go to chapter 16 and verses 12 and 13. In chapter 16, verses 12 and 13, Job says, I was at ease, but he shattered me. He's also taken me by my neck and shaken me to pieces, and he set me up as his target, and his archers surround me. He pierces my heart and does not pity. God's just set me up as this human target, and he's firing his fiery darts at me. And again you feel like crying out, no, Job, no, that's Satan. Those fiery darts that are being fired at you are the fiery darts of the wicked one. Put on the whole armour of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Take up the armour of God. Don't you know what it says in Ephesians chapter 6, Job? Then you remember, Job doesn't have Ephesians chapter 6. But you do. Job cries out in chapter 9, in verse 24. He says, the earth is given into the hand of the wicked. He covers the face of its judges. God covers the face of its judges. If it is not he, who else could it be? I know who it could be, Job. And it's not God. That is Satan's art. And that is how he is wearing Job down. That is his strategy. That has been his strategy ever since the Garden of Eden. He will do his utmost to twist your understanding of who God is until you worship a God that resembles more the devil than it resembles God. And so successful is Satan in this that, let me quote Sinclair Ferguson, he says, For all their protestations that they believe in a God of love, deep down, people believe the opposite. And he's talking about basically unbelievers here. They fear that God is out to destroy their lives. They do not trust him. They do not love him. They do not obey him. They do not worship him. They do not want him. They too have exchanged the truth about God for the lie. And then Sinclair Ferguson adds this. He says, but even believers who have made some progress in their pilgrimage find themselves confronted by the same lie. It can force itself on us because of circumstances, trials, and perplexities. It comes through Satan's art. Why would he retire a weapon he has so successfully used throughout the millennia? That is Satan's art. The second question I would ask Job is this. Where can I find help? What is God really like? Where can I find help? And this was a question that Job grappled with. And like that first question as to what God is really like, sometimes he comes so close to an answer as to what God is really like, and sometimes he comes so close to questions where I can find help. If you look there in chapter 9, verse 32, he says, For God is not a man, as I am, that I may answer him, that we should go to court together. Nor is there any mediator between us who may lay his hand on us both. So Job is wrestling with this question. If only there was someone to arbitrate between us. Someone who is powerful like God, who knew what it was to be like God. Someone who at the same time was very weak and human, like me, who understands what it's like to be me. If only there was someone like this to arbitrate between us. And you get little glimpses of this in Job's struggles throughout this book. If you look at chapter 16 and verse 19, Job says this. Surely even now my witness is in heaven and my evidence is on high. My friends scorn me. My eyes pour out tears to God. Oh, that one might plead for a man with God as a man pleads for his neighbour. That's what Job is really wanting. That's what he's looking for. He's looking for someone who will plead with God for him as a man pleads with his neighbour. And again, you know, it's going to be really frustrating reading through the book of Job, because you read something like that and you think, Job, you know, I have the answer. I found what you're looking for. And yes, you have found the answer. And that's the point, isn't it? Job had so few resources at his disposal when he was confronted with Satan's art. We think when Job lived, there was none of the Bible written. We think he probably lived around about the time of Abraham. And he had so little to know where to turn for help. But you do. You know where to turn for help. You have so much more than Job ever had. Which brings us to the answer to his two questions. What is God really like? Where can I find help? And they're the same question, aren't they? What is God really like? John 1 and verse 18. No one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, who is in the bosom of the Father, he has shown us what God is like. And I don't just mean the way that Jesus appeared. We don't just see what God is like by looking at what Jesus looked like or how he sounded when he lived here upon this earth. But especially in what Jesus did, because that above all else shows us what God is like. God demonstrates his own love toward us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. That's what God is like. That's what we have to hold on to when we're going through our blackest, darkest periods in life. That is what God is like. God did not spare his own Son, but delivered him up for us all. That is what God is like. And therefore, how shall we not with him also freely give us all things? Yes, I know God is sovereign, and it is great to remember that in our deepest, darkest black hole. It's great to remember that God is infinite, eternal and unchangeable in his being, wisdom, power, holiness and justice. But he is also a God who has shown us what he is like in Jesus Christ. And nothing can compare with the way God has revealed himself to us in Jesus Christ. Where can I find help? And the answer is the same. It is in Jesus Christ. He is this mediator that Job longed for. He is like God, who knows what it's like to be like God, because he is God. He is the wonderful counselor, the mighty God, the everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. And at the same time, he is very weak and human like me, and he understands what it is to be me, and he can sympathise with me in my weaknesses, having been tempted in all points as I am, yet without sin. So he is this mediator that Job looked for, who can lay his hand on both God and me. So there's the answer to both of Job's questions. What is God really like? Where can I find help? And for once the Sunday school children will get it right. The answer really is Jesus. Last week, in our time of prayer for revival, we considered that verse in Hebrews 11, verse 6. He who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is the rewarder of those who diligently seek him. We must believe that God is, and that means that we believe in him as he really is, and that means looking to Christ. And we must believe that God is the rewarder of those who diligently seek him. And that means we must seek God where help is to be found, and that means looking to Christ. You may go through, you probably will go through, more periods of blackness and darkness in your life, like Job, though I don't think you will ever go through a period as black and as dark as the one Job went through. But Satan has his arts, he's not going to change his method, and you will face times again, I don't doubt, when you too are faced with the same sort of temptations that Job faced, and when Satan will be seeking to insinuate into your mind all kinds of lies about God, and he'll do that even by telling you, this is the truth about God, yes it will be, and he'll get you to ignore the rest of the truth about God. And if you know Christ, you know what Job could only grope for. You know Christ. Amen.